Coming up in this week's programme, we have a good, long, hard look at the various facets of GMO. Alan takes us through a movie called 100% Gluten Free. We have a look at the book 35 Coconut Flour Recipes. Plus, we answer the question, should a low-carb diet always be ketogenic? All that and more in this week's edition of the Low Carb and Paleo Show. Hello, I'm joined in the studio yet again with my co-host, Alan Pro. Alan, how are you today?
Hello, Mark, and hello, everyone. I hope everyone is doing fine today.
So, Alan, what have you been up to this last week or so?
It's nice of you to ask, now that you mention it. Saturday, I was at the March Against Monsanto in Austin, and it was a great event. We didn't have a rain this year, so that was nice. But I was a little disappointed. Although there was quite a few people, the numbers didn't seem to increase from last year, and it makes me wonder, are people paying attention to GMO issue? Because, you know, I sort of assume that, as, you know, God knows I'm putting my 2,000 cents worth of information on GMOs, and yet I'm not seeing the crowds getting bigger. So it makes me wonder, you know.
I think it's probably mostly down to the fact that there are so many people who just don't really know what the issues and the dangers are with GMO.
Right, and the timing was also kind of, for us here in America, the timing was a little off in the sense that it was also part of a long weekend. So it was Memorial Day this weekend in America, and so a lot of people probably took the whole weekend off and went somewhere else. So that might be the reason why not so many people showed up. But let's say we had a great rally, we had good speakers, we had, you know, Mike Adams, which lives in Austin, and he's a big anti-GMO speaker and writes tons of articles on the subject as well. Mm-hmm. We had a cute little girl that could barely manage to speak for 1 minute. She was so shy. She wrote a book on GMOs for kids. Mm-hmm. And so she wanted to talk about this a little bit. And then we had speakers talking about the political side of things. We had a farmer, which is, he's very well known in Austin, Bargy Creek Farm, and he's been growing organic for the past 20-something years. He mm-hmm. was actually the first urban farmer in Austin.
All right.
20-something years ago. Now we have about half a dozen urban farms in Austin. And we had some music in between, you know, some good old-fashioned hippie-style songs, you know. But Austin used to be a very hippie town the old days, you know, about 30 years ago, before we got invaded by the Californians. they're all moving from California to Austin because we have similar lifestyle, about half the price, so. So it was a good event. We had a good time, a good rally, and I hope more people show up next year.
Mind you, saying that, this is quite it's not just in Austin, is it? This rally, it's been all over the place.
Yeah, this event is held in 350 cities all over the world.
All right,
all over the world, Australia, Europe. I'm not sure if they have it in China. I know they have it in Japan. Canada, of course, Mexico. Mexico is very big on the anti-GMO movement because they are destroying their corn crops down there.
Now, Alan, I know you were talking about it the other day when we were chatting, but there's a movie that you wanted to tell us about. Was it 100% Gluten-Free Movie or something like that?
Yes, I wanted to mention a movie that, if all goes well, I'll be part of. It's called The 100% Gluten-Free. I like that this young lady, her name is Sonja Luther. She's German, but she's doing all of the studies here in Austin. She's a celiac disease patient, and she's doing her movie both for the American public and the German public. Apparently, in Germany, the gluten-free movement hasn't been as expensive as it is in America, so she's taking that to her country as well.
All right.
I'm supporting this movie on Kickstarter, And they don't have a website, so to speak, but they have a Facebook page. And if you go to Facebook, you can do a search on the number 100, the word percent gluten-free, and then it will take you there, and you'll kind of keep track of how the movie is going and who they're interviewing. You know, they keep a good blog of what's going on. So this is what I'd like to recommend this week.
Okay. Do you know roughly what it's about?
It's going to be a series of interviews from the point of people that are suffering from celiac and people like me that are actually working and helping celiac patients or people with gluten allergies. And, you know, help them with their diet and how to live through it, you know, and live a normal life, basically.
So it sounds like it's going to be quite an interesting movie, especially for people who suffer with celiac.
Very educational, not too heavy, you know. Sometimes some of these movies can be a little heavy, but this one is mostly to help people with food allergies, in this particular case, gluten, but... You know, you can infer from that that other food allergies could be handled in a similar way as well.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what the paleo diet is about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, the paleo diet does work exceptionally well for people who've got problems with gluten sensitivity or allergies, doesn't it?
Yes, because it takes... As you know, it takes all grains out of it. So even if you're not sure you're allergic to gluten itself, which is part of the wheat and other similar grains, if you're not sure which grain you are allergic to, then going paleo will take care of eliminating all grains.
Mm.
And this way you can carefully reintroduce the grains that you think you're not allergic to, and then take it from there. That's a good way to go about it.
Excellent. Now, in the same vein, I'd like to sort of have a quick look at one of the books that I came across the other day, and that is one by Anita Thomas, and it's called 35 Coconut Flour Recipes, or subtitled The Delicious Gluten-Free Paleo Alternative to Wheat. And this seems to be quite a popular book, both in and around the web. You can find it on Amazon, and it's got quite a few good reviews as well. It's a book that provides 35 exciting and easy to prepare delicious recipes that you can make quite easily at home. The recipes are simple for most meals, breakfast, lunches, dinners, and even desserts. So that makes it quite popular with many people. And quite frankly, if you're looking for some really cool coconut recipes, then you don't really have to look that much further.
I do have some few recipes in my paleo book that are also made with coconut flour.
Okay.
And almond flour.
Yes, I'm a fan of both of those. I often use almond flour in stews. One of the reviews it received by a lady called Angela said, "I've been wanting to cook and bake with more coconut flour. This book has a great variety of recipes, especially the breakfast ones. I'm excited to try the pancakes, waffles, and to make fresh bread."
Sounds good.
Yeah, well, it's something worth looking at.
Yeah, I found coconut flour to be a little more difficult to work with because it's a very dry flour. So you have to adjust the amount of fat and liquids in the recipe. So don't just substitute regular flour for coconut flour and expect the same results. You need to also adjust a little bit, you know, the baking soda amount as well, increase that.
We'll have to see if we can wangle one of your recipes out of you one of these days.
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to twist my arm, not too hard, but...
Okay, all right.
Just enough.
I'll send you a bar of chocolate. How's that?
Okay. That'll work.
Excellent.
I hope it won't be melted by the time it gets here.
No, I'll send it UPS. Now, the other day, Alan and I had the privilege of speaking with Heather Jacobson. Now, Heather, amongst other things, is very much into going gluten-free, as well as being the power behind the website Stuffed Pepper. During our talk, we chatted about all sorts of things, including why going gluten-free should be really going paleo. We also talked about how having a problem with gluten can affect so many of our bodily systems. And in this little extract, Heather's talking about how a problem with gluten sensitivity can lead on to all sorts of things, such as a problem with your thyroid. Let's go over to Alan and Heather right now.
Did you have issues with your thyroid as well?
Yes, and I've had issues with my thyroid. See, I went gluten-free in 2001, but before that I'd had digestive issues as far back as I can remember. And I had a colonoscopy at 20. Again, the doctor didn't find anything, told my dad it was all in my head. A few years later, I had my appendix out, and a few short weeks after my appendix was out, I got a hyperthyroid condition. And I was always convinced that there must have been a connection, but no doctors saw a connection, but I thought there must be. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure it was gluten was the connection. But now, later in life, after going hyperthyroid, I had to take the radioactive iodine treatment, which eventually turned to hypothyroid. So right. I had been able to regulate it with a daily supplement, a daily pill. But, you know, again, probably the gluten caused me, you know, the cross-contamination and the little bits of gluten that I was probably eating, as well as changes in hormones, you know, with my second child. It's probably a perfect storm for setting me up for, you know, further complications.
Right. I have heard of other people with gluten allergy mentioning thyroid issues. Do you think that gluten sensitivity creates a thyroid issue, or is a thyroid issue might...
That I can't tell you. There is definitely a connection between thyroid and gluten issues. I think they say something like 14% of people with celiac disease have a thyroid autoimmune condition. There's actually a big thyroid summit, health summit going on right now. Sean Croxton from Underground Wellness is hosting it. And so those are the experts that they would know. I just know that I have a problem with thyroid. I'm pretty sure my mother does and probably has a problem with gluten. So there is a connection. Which came first? It's probably a chicken and egg syndrome. Gluten, you know, and especially if you have intestinal permeability, or also called leaky gut, will be attacking your body in other ways. So it could have been from the gluten. My opinion would say it's probably gluten the cause of it, but I'm not an expert in that.
Would you suggest that if someone comes and mention I have a thyroid issue, should they look into the gluten connection and go gluten-free to see if it improves?
Well, I mean, I would definitely have them talk to a doctor about that. It depends on what kind of symptoms you're having. Gluten affects people in all different ways, and that's what makes it so tricky to diagnose a gluten sensitivity, especially. Because it's different from celiac disease, and the way that it affects people, there's 200 disorders and counting that are related to gluten. And so it affects people in different ways. It can affect your hormones, it can affect your brain, it can affect your skin. Not everybody complains of digestive issues that have a problem with gluten, but certainly a lot of people do complain of digestive issues. But if you are if you have, you know, loss of energy, if you seem to have some of the classic thyroid symptoms, there isn't any reason not to check thyroid, you know, levels when you talk to your doctor.
Right. For us, our listeners,
you'll be able to hear the full interview with Heather Jacobson next week on the Low Carbon Paleo Show. Okay, on to our main story of the week. Now, this is something that is, again, very close to Alan's heart, as you would have noticed from his comments earlier about going to the Monsanto shindig. He's going to tell us how to avoid GMOs when eating out.
Okay, so this is, like you said, this is close to my heart in the sense that having studying GMOs for the past year and a half and writing a book about it, I went very deep into the issues related to genetically engineered food. And the easy answer on how to avoid GMO when going out is to avoid known genetically engineered crops, which are corn, soy, sugar beets. Of course, cotton you will not eat, but cotton seed oil you will most likely encounter. which is a little harder to figure out because, you know, typically the cooks don't necessarily know what they're cooking with unless they are very particular. So those are your basic ingredients you're trying to avoid. If you see them on the menu, it's better to ask if they are from organic source. So that's the basic thing. The problem is nowadays genetically engineered ingredients are in everything. So it makes your job, if you suspect you have a digestive problem created by genetically engineered ingredients, which I believe personally is a major offender, then it gets complicated because you would have to be almost paranoid about it, which this is not necessarily where I want you to go. But the basics, and I can't go into details because, you know, my book is addressing that and it's about 300 pages long, so obviously I can't get there right now, but I'll give you the basics for now. So, for example, sugar. A lot of sugar nowadays is coming from genetically engineered sugar beets.
Okay.
Why? Because it's a crop that's been subsidized, it's a crop that is easy to grow, and it's cheap. So typically, if it's not specified cane sugar or if it's not specified organic sugar, then I would avoid it because it, you know, considering that sugar beet crop is about 80% of the crops is genetically engineered. You can almost guarantee that it's coming from genetically engineered. Now, the biggest one is corn because corn is in everything. And so, because I know how to read the labels, I know which ingredients are coming from corn, and there are hundreds of them. So it makes things complicated. But if you see a dish on the menu that has corn in it, then unless the corn is certified organic, I would avoid that particular dish.
Okay.
The most well-known product coming from corn is fructose and high fructose corn syrup, which you can find in a lot of products because it's the cheapest form of sweetener out there. So if you see it as HFCS, sometimes they won't spell it out entirely and they try to fool you into, you know, by shortening it into just the letters. So if you see that, then avoid it. And anything with corn syrup in it or fructose are suspect. Another one is canola oil. So canola oil and cotton seed oil are both in the same genetically engineered basket in the sense that they're both crops that have been developed and created to resist Roundup. And so in doing so, they allow farmers to spray even more pesticides on their crops. And even if the crop itself is not toxic, then what's on it, you know, because you cannot wash away glyphosate, avoid it as much as possible. So soy oil also is also very prominent oil because it's cheap. So you got the trifecta here. You have canola, cottonseed oil, and soy oil. All of these are suspect, so if it's at all possible, try to go only for olive oil, which is not genetically engineered. And of course, if you go to the higher end restaurant, then most likely you will find certified organic olive oil. You can also ask them to cook with coconut oil, if that's a possibility. So those are the major ones that you need to pay attention to. Those are the biggies, you know. Now keep in mind that both corn, cotton, soy, and sugar beets have hundreds of components as additives or flavorings or anything like that, and they're used in not only in your groceries but also used in your any kind of prepared food. They are in supplements and pharmaceutical drugs. You know, corn syrup, you find corn syrup in a lot of, you know, syrup, like throat syrups.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So unless it's specified on label, you know, sugar cane, then the syrup is either made from sugar beet or it's coming from corn syrup.
Okay.
Okay, so keep that in mind. For people that like fruits, some of the fruits, not all of them, The few fruits that you have to be careful about is papaya, especially coming from Hawaii. They are also trying to introduce a genetically engineered pineapple in the market. They're also trying to introduce a genetically engineered apple as well in the market. So these are actually in the process of being approved. They are not yet in the market, but the way the FDA has been acting is probably going to get through just as easily as the rest. So, without going too big and too wide on this discussion, these are the minimal things you should be looking for if you are concerned with a genetically engineered ingredient.
Excellent, excellent. So those are the things we've got to look out for then.
Yes. Other suggestion, if you know your restaurant, I personally, probably because I'm a chef, I try to get to know the chef, or at least the owners, and see if I can have a little discussion before I even go to the restaurant. Typically, I go to a restaurant where I know and trust the chefs to cook food that is either locally grown or organic. I know it's a little bit more expensive, but it's well worth the slight additional effort. So, for example, here in Austin, there's only, out of thousands and thousands of restaurants, there's only half a dozen restaurants I trust to go eat and have fresh, locally grown, non-GMO food. And I know it sounds like very picky, but I'm sorry, I had a friend of mine when I was working at People's Pharmacy asked me, well, with all you know about GMO, what are you eating? Is there anything left to eat? And say, yeah, if you're careful, if you know what to look for, yes, there's still plenty. Like I mentioned already, certified organic, locally grown farmers. So get to know your farmers, get to know your restaurants. And also, if you're looking at the grocery shelves, look for non-GMO verified labels on your products. And those are the basic answers, the easy way to avoid them.
Ideal, ideal. So there we go. Good tips about how to avoid GMO when eating out and when you're shopping as well. So we've got a question that's often asked of us, and that is, should a low carb diet always be ketogenic? Well, the short answer is, most of the time, it will be ketogenic. And even more so if you want to use it for weight loss. Being in the state of ketosis is simply where your body is using ketones for fuel rather than using blood sugar for fuel. In effect, these help your body to break down the fat and use those for your body's source of energy. That has two main advantages. Firstly, you're actually burning off the fat, which is a great thing if you want to lose fat. And also, you might notice that you can carry around a lot more fat than you can glucose in your blood. So that means you're going to have a lot more energy for a lot longer. So the advantages of being in ketosis far outweigh the disadvantages of having to be a little bit picky about what you eat. So should a low carb diet always be ketogenic? If you want to lose weight, yes. If you want to get maximum performance out of your body, yes. If you're just an accidental low carber, as some people on the paleo diet are, then it's not necessary totally, but you will find it very helpful indeed. So, Alan, have you got a tip of the week for us?
I do. Continuing on the genetically engineered subject, I have a couple of tips on how to switch from GMO food, which is basically hidden since we have no labeling yet on GMOs, to non-GMO food. Of course, the easy one is switch to organic, but I have some specific example. You can switch from Chef Boyardee pasta to Annie's organic pasta. You can switch from Kraft macaroni and cheese to Annie's organic mac and cheese. You can also switch from Hormel chili with what I call mysterious meat.
Is that mysterious meat of dubious origins?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know it. You can switch to Amy's organic chili, which I eat every single week, by the way. Switch from DiGiorno or any other pre-made pizza to Amy's organic pizza. Also one of my favorite. They actually have one gluten-free version that you can eat.
Oh, I do.
And you can switch from Hamburger Helper to Annie's Organic Skillet Meals.
Mm-hmm.
You can also switch from regular ramen noodles, which typically contain soy sauce from genetically engineered soy, to Koyo Foods Organic Noodles. And of course, you know, many, many more on your grocery store. So basically, the simple take of that is, if you can afford it, avoid anything with anything mysterious and unlabeled on it, and go for the organic version of it.
Someone else was telling me the other day, if they can't actually say out loud the ingredients on the packet, they won't buy it.
Yeah, yeah. Or if there's more than four ingredients, then, you know, avoid it.
Yep, that sounds like a good idea.
But the thing is, the not-so-funny thing is that the industry is very smart about it, and they're trying to rename some ingredients to hide the fact that it is, like, for example, that they're asking permission from the FDA to change the name of corn syrup to natural corn, you know, natural sugar, which on one hand is, it is natural. But nowadays, natural doesn't mean anything, really.
Mm.
So it's basically they're trying to hide the truth from us by renaming the product.
Yeah, yeah. I personally think it would be far easier if they just used proper ingredients instead of all this cheap garbage they keep trying to put in food.
Well, that's the argument. That's one of their arguments, is that, well, you know, if we stop growing GMO food, it's going to cost a lot more, which is, in my opinion, it's bull. It's bull, because we have been growing food naturally without genetically engineered for centuries before, and there was still plenty of food and available food to anyone. And this is why people are becoming more and more suspicious of their food and the movement to buy more organic and more locally grown, or even grow your own food, is growing and growing. And the industry is aware of that, and they're not happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they can see their profits being taken away from them, can't they, really?
Yeah, one little kid made a very good comment this weekend, which is something that I've been advocating a long time in my books. But the consumers have the power to change the industry.
Oh, easily, yeah.
All they have to do is to change buying what they're buying to something better or healthier, and then the industry will get the message, you know, stop making this up, because we're going to stop buying it. Obviously, they are still have a hearing problem at this point.
Well, it's not so much they have a hearing problem, is it? It's more the fact they realize how much money they're going to lose if...
Right.
Consumers do have the right to know what's in their food.
Yeah, but on the other hand, one could argue that since genetically engineered food is banned in 64 countries all over the world, and I'm sure they still make money selling those non-GMO crops in those countries, so why can't they do it in America?
That's a very good question. One will have to answer some other time.
Some other time, yes.
Perhaps we could ask some of the company representatives on to answer that question for us. Do you think they'll come?
Looking for a fight here?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I'm just looking for common sense. But that's a bit of a challenge, isn't it, though? So anybody out there who is a representative of a company that makes GMO products, if you'd like to answer that question for us publicly, then we'll give you a platform.
Okay. Well, I'll let you, Mark, handle that side of the interview, because I might lose my temper.
Well, that's it from this edition of the Low Carbon Paleo Show. We hope you've enjoyed everything that you've heard, all the information that we've passed over. So it's goodbye from me, Mark Moxham.
And goodbye, everyone, from Alan. And I hope you enjoyed the show, and see you soon.
Cheerio.